Yeah, and welcome everyone to a new year and to church today. We are going to start a new series that will go on for the next couple of months, where we're going to be looking at a really exciting part of the Bible called the Sermon on the Mount. And this really captures the heart of Jesus' teaching more than any other part of the Bible. Over the month of December, we were thinking about those wonderful words in Isaiah, which talked about Jesus, actually, and he took these words up, where he said, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to preach good news." And then we looked at different ways that that good news comes across to people. And that's a good way to follow, this is a good way to follow up with that, because just after Jesus said those words, "He has anointed me to preach the good news," all of the Gospels record that Jesus did that. He went around from town to town preaching the good news of the kingdom of God. Mark records it, Luke records it, Matthew records it on several occasions. Large crowds of people listened to the message. He also healed people. He cast spirits out of people and people's lives were changed. And as this was happening, a whole group of people started to form around Jesus. He'd already called the first four disciples, Peter and Andrew and James and John, but he was at the stage where he was about to start really his mission in changing the world and changing the culture of his time. He was going to call other disciples to form his team, and then he was going to teach them what it really looked like to be his follower. And that's what the Sermon on the Mount is all about. It's Jesus gathering his disciples around him, speaking to the crowds as well, and anyone who would have ears to hear, of what does it mean to follow Jesus? And we need to hear this message again today, for all kinds of reasons. So the heart of this series that we're doing is trying to understand how we can change our culture. Because this was not just a private message for a group of people who wanted to go to heaven. In fact, it was really got nothing to do with that. This was a public message for anyone who wanted to hear it, for how they could change their culture, how they could change their world. And that's what why we need to rediscover it today. I grew up in a church, like many of you probably did as well, where the heart of the Christian message is accept Jesus into your heart and you'll be ready to go to heaven. And whilst that's important, that is only a fraction of what the Christian message is all about. So often we can do that, think we're ready for heaven, but the rest of the world goes on as normal. And we need to understand that the message of the good news that Jesus came to bring is about changing our culture and changing our community and other people's lives, learning to live as followers of Jesus by his values and his priorities. So that's what this series is going to be all about, and we really hope that you'll stick with us, come as many weeks as you can, and more important, learn to kind of take this on board and live it out. 2019 could be an interesting year for all kinds of reasons. Sorry to put this first word up yet again, but it's going to be a year of uncertainty. We hear that. We've already been hearing that. It may be another year of violence. We pray every year, don't we, around the Christmas season for peace in our world, particularly the Middle East. And yet when we look at our news, we see continued bombings going on, not just in the Middle East, but across Europe and other parts of our world. I put up the word bread, not just about bread, but in the Lord's Prayer, Jesus teaches us to pray for our daily bread. And he's not just thinking about bread, but he's thinking about all the basic needs that we have in our lives. And as we've looked back last Sunday, Jeanette was reminding us that we have fed over 700 families in our community through our food bank ministry. That's 700 families who were hungry, who didn't have bread, who didn't have basic needs. And we've reached out to them and we've helped them. And in this past year, we've tried to extend that into other types of needs that people have, to heat their homes, for basic furniture, for clothing. And we've given out other things to people as well. And we want to continue to do that in the year ahead. And not just through our care and share and our food bank. I know on a Tuesday night, we give out bread, as it were, in a different way by reaching out to children and young people, by listening to them, by supporting them, by praying for them, by leading them and helping them and their families as well. We try to do that through our messy church as well, through other families who come in. So this year, in all of these ministries and ones I haven't even mentioned this morning, we want to continue to reach out with the bread of life, whatever form that comes in, words, food, clothes, encouragement, prayer, whatever kind of support, we want to keep doing that as a church. And I've put Mary Brown up at the end of this list because I really believe that this year has to be a year where the Mary Brown Trust and all that we want to do with that really kicks in. And that's not just speaking to the trustees who are seeking to oversee that and get all the people in place to do it, but for all of us. We've already had all kinds of applications coming in and requests and interest in it, and I believe that could be a really key way that this year we can start to reach out to our community, start to invest in other organizations and groups who want to make a difference, support the things that we're already doing. There's other things we'd love to do in our community that we're not doing yet, and this is a year, I believe, where we can start to do it. So all of this, I really want this to be a year where we try to reach out, as Colin has said, in a positive way. We're going to hear negativity from our community on the news. We're going to hear all of that, the scary message of what's going to happen in March. That's not going to end. We're going to hear concerning messages from others coming in. But we want this year to be a year when we really reach out with the bread of life. I came across this picture, which hopefully is going to come up. Kingdom culture. This is from Elevation Worship. It's a couple of years ago, so 2016. This was their theme for the year. Elevation Worship, if you don't know, is a church and a community in the States. A lot of our worship songs that we learn, that we sing, come out of Elevation Worship. And they chose kingdom culture as their theme of a couple of years ago. But they have a picture here of a greenhouse. You maybe can't see it fully. And it's called the greenhouse effect, under the influence of his presence. And I thought, yeah, that kind of summarizes the Sermon on the Mount. That summarizes what we want to be as a church. We want to create a climate, a different culture in our community. And a greenhouse is a good way of imagining that. How we can create that climate so that people we come in contact with start to feel loved and supported and listened to and changed. And we have seen very specifically how God has done that in this year behind us. And I pray that this year really will be a year where we see that happen. John Stott wrote a book on the Sermon on the Mount over 40 years ago. It was called Counter-Christian Counterculture. And this is one of the things he says. The Sermon on the Mount is probably the best known part of Jesus' teaching. Though it may be the most admired, it is arguably the least understood and certainly the least obeyed. It is the nearest thing to a manifesto that he ever uttered, for it is his own description of who he wanted his followers to be and what he wanted his followers to do. It describes what human life and community look like when they come under the gracious rule of God, and the result is a Christian counterculture. And that word rule is the word kingdom. And that's why he preached about the kingdom, and we're calling this a kingdom culture, because it's about coming under the rule of King Jesus, coming under God's rule in our lives. And he says, basically says, when we get this message, when we start to obey the message of Jesus from the Sermon on the Mount, and be the kind of people he wants us to be, and do the things he wants us to do, communities start to change. That's what happened in the days of Jesus, and that is what we want to see happen as well. So, how does all this begin? Look to Matthew chapter 5, please. That's where we find the Sermon on the Mount. And I just want us to look at the opening couple of verses to start with. Matthew chapter 5. As I've said, Jesus has already been going around and preaching this message. Crowds have been coming and gathering around him. Matthew 5 verse 1 says, "When he saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and he sat down. His disciples came to them and he began to teach them, saying." So how does all this begin? How do we change our culture? It begins the same way it began for these followers of Jesus. Crowds and crowds of people with all kinds of needs, food, clothing, security, freedom, health, homes, safety, all these groups of people were gathering around Jesus with all kinds of needs, just like we're finding today in our community. But Jesus goes up on a mountainside and he sits down. And this is important. Jesus did not come into the world to force his message on any people, on any government. Jesus did not come into the world to start a revolution in the sense of getting groups of people together to put on vests and go and march through the streets of a city, whether peacefully or not. He didn't do that. He didn't mobilize his followers and say, right, let's go to Jerusalem. Let's storm the gates of the Sanhedrin. Let's take them all on. Tell them what a bad job they're doing. Tell them how hypocritical they are. And let's have a revolution and overthrow the powers. Let's take on these nasty Romans. They think they're so powerful with their weapons and their money and their buildings and all that they've got. Let's really show them who's in charge. God's in charge, right? And mobilize all of his followers to go and take on the Roman legions. He didn't do that. He goes and he sits down on a mountain. And he says, if you're interested in hearing my message, if you want to know how to change the world, you come to me. You come to me. I'm sitting and I'm waiting. Now, that can be so frustrating, can't it? Because we want to make a difference by going out and being active and proactive. We want to take on the authorities and take on the forces and see change come about. And I understand why we would want to do that. But so often, that is just not Jesus' way. Jesus' way is sitting down and waiting until people who are really interested in making a difference will come and take the time to listen before they do anything. There's this story in the Gospels of these two women. I know we've preached on it, and some of you have heard it before, but just want to mention it again, Mary and Martha. Martha was an activist. She wanted to get everything ready, get the meal prepared, sort out all the arrangements and impress Jesus by her organization skill. What did Mary do? She sat on the ground under Jesus' feet and listened to him and did nothing else. Martha was so frustrated because Mary wasn't acting, but Mary chose the right thing. That's what Jesus says. And he affirmed Martha. He said, "You have a good heart, Martha. I know why you're doing all this, but Mary has chosen the better part." And at the start of this year, and in our lives as Christians, even if we've heard this message 100 times before, what we need to do is come to the feet of Jesus and listen. What is your message? How can we change the world? How should I be living my life? How can I make a difference in my school? How can we make a difference with our neighbors? How can we reach out to others? How should we do it, Jesus? That's how it begins. His disciples came to him. Disciple, follower, a learner, somebody who really wants to get the message of Jesus, wants to learn that message, wants to embrace it, wants to follow it. That's a disciple. And disciples go to Jesus to listen. His disciples came up to him, and he began to teach them, saying these things. And what he gave them was a new message for a whole new age. He taught them a whole new way of living, if you want, a new reality of what it meant to live their lives in God's kingdom. to live their lives as though God was in charge. Not the Romans, not the Jewish religious authorities, but to live our lives as though God was in charge of our lives, which he is. But we can live our lives as though God wasn't in charge. We can live our lives believing he's in charge, but in actuality, we are the ones in charge. We decide what we're going to do. And he's trying to teach them how to live their lives under God's rule. It was a whole new law for a new Israel. But we want to move on to what he actually said. Sorry, why this is going slowly today. Here we go. Let's move on. So, blessed. The first word that Jesus says to his followers here is the word blessed in verse 3. Blessed, and he repeats it 8 times. My son Cameron plays football, as you know, and there's a boy in his team had an injury, and he wasn't able to play. And he was taken, and he had an MRI before Christmas. And his parents suspected that he would be out for up to a year. They suspected that he had a very serious back injury, that his back was cracked, and that's what one specialist had said to them. But they sent him in, he had an MRI, and just yesterday morning, they posted on Facebook these words, "We are blessed." Why are they blessed? Because the MRI came back negative, as in it's not what they suspected, and their son will be able to start training again in the new year. And they said, "We feel blessed." Blessed is one of those words that we can use so much, isn't it? It can become a cliche, like a tired old cliche. Oh, I'm blessed. You know, you hear someone who wins a sports game or wins a medal or whatnot and say, "I'm blessed." But what does that word really, really mean? It's actually a dynamic word. It can be a good word for us to use more often in 2019 when we really understand what it means. Because blessed means these things. It does mean to be happy. And a person who is a happy person is a blessed person. That family yesterday were happy with the news that their son does not have a cracked back. We are happy when things change in our lives for the good. When we get a job, when we're able to pay our bills, when we can feed our families, when we can go on a holiday, when our relationships are what they should be, we feel blessed, right? And there's And it's a wonderful feeling to have. But it's much deeper than that, because blessed also means contentment. It doesn't just mean you've got everything that you want. It means you're content with what you have. That's what blessed means. So you may not have many, many things, but you can still have contentment because you realize what you do have, you're grateful for. And ultimately, it means favor. It means you begin to realize you and I live under God's favor. And when God's favor comes upon us, we are blessed. Even when we don't have lots of stuff. To know that God is with us, he accepts us, we are a child of God, and he's never going to leave us or abandon us. He's with us in our circumstances is the greatest blessing that anyone can have. And that's what Jesus wants to teach us. He wants to teach us again what it means to live a blessed life, what it is to be happy, what it is to be content, and what it is to live under his favor. And when we discover this, we will start to change as people. This is what he's teaching, and this is what these people are going to experience. And when we change and start living out of that relationship with him, then others will notice a difference. Others will want to experience that. Others will ask questions of us, like, "What's the deal? You seem very happy." Okay, what makes you like that? And when people start asking questions and having conversations, then we can start to talk to them. Okay, I want to rattle through these very quickly. Sorry, this seems to be going too quick this morning. Each of these characteristics is a sermon in and of itself, but I just want to give you a taste this morning. So we're going to go a wee bit longer. We've had a lot in the service already today, but I want to take the next 10 minutes or so just to go through these eight characteristics. These are eight qualities that Jesus wants to work in all of our lives. And again, I know we want to see things change quickly. You know, one author said, we are into microwaving. God's into marinating. Okay, we want to put things in the microwave, push a button, and change it immediately. But God takes his time. And when we start to let these qualities, these characteristics form in our lives, when we understand them and start to live out of this, these attitudes, we will change. Our circumstances will change. Our lives will change. Our attitude to our problems will change, and people will start to take notice. So what's the first one? I'm going to go them in three groups. Group number one, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Jesus is trying to teach people and us that it all starts by realizing we don't have what it takes. And that's a very important lesson to start. We are not the rulers and masters of our own destiny. We don't have what it takes to change our lives, never mind other people's lives or our community. In a sense, we are spiritually bankrupt. And Jesus says, when you realize you don't have it all together, spiritually and other ways, that's what he means by poor in spirit. In Luke's gospel, Luke just says, blessed are the poor, but Matthew wants to qualify that. So it's not just about being poor, it's about being poor in your spirit internally. He says what? Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. All of a sudden we realize when we don't have what it takes, we actually have everything that's necessary because we have God's rule and presence in our lives. And when we, so often when we have so much stuff, our lives are cluttered with stuff, we forget this. We forget what's most important, which is living under God's rule, letting God rule and guide us in our lives. And when we don't have stuff, and that's why we see in so many countries where Christians are poor, they get this. And they get this in ways that we don't get it in the West. And so maybe this year we need to restart our lives, reboot our lives at this starting point and saying, God, I may have so much stuff in my life. I may have done so many things, but ultimately without you, I am spiritually bankrupt. I need you. The second thing he says is this. Oh, please stop going so quickly. Blessed are those who mourn. I think I need a new battery in this, so let's go to the old-fashioned way. There we go. Blessed are those who mourn. That does not mean blessed are you if you go around looking sad and grumpy. Okay? That's not what he means. Jesus is not looking for sad people. He's actually looking for happy people, all right? People who are blessed. What he's trying to say is connected to the first bit. He's saying, when you realize you don't have it, you are spiritually bankrupt, he said, then we mourn our condition without God. Also, we mourn the mistakes that we've made. We mourn the fact that we have actually treated God as though he needs us. That we have all of these things together and we've done all of these great things for God, and isn't God so lucky to have people like us around? No, he's not. We mourn the mistakes and the attitudes that we have had so that we can change. Jesus says it's like repenting, changing our attitude and mourning the ways that we've acted without God leading us and without God taking in charge. And he says, when we do that, when we recognize that, he says, we will be comforted. God does not want us to be in that state. He wants to comfort us. And again, comfort is an interesting word. For us, comfort is a nice, gentle word, okay? Like you go up to someone and you put your arm around them, okay? That's comfort. But in the Bible, comfort actually means to strengthen someone. It's someone who's weighed down, who all of a sudden is lifted up. So it's not just putting an arm around someone, it's actually picking someone up, holding them up, if you want, putting your shoulder under their shoulder, say, come on, we can do this together. That's comfort in the Bible sense. And it's like God saying, okay, I know you've made mistakes. I get it. I acknowledge that. Now let's go. Stand up. Be strong. I'm with you. Let's go and make a difference. And then thirdly, he said, blessed are the meek. And this develops this again. Because to be meek, I've put at the top, means to be submissively hopeful. To be meek, and I know this is a cliche, but I'll say it again, does not mean to be a weak person. It does not mean to be a doormat so that everyone stands on you and walks over the top of you. That is not meekness. A meek person is a powerful person because they know that God is with them. They recognize we are spiritually bankrupt. We haven't got what it takes, but we do have what it takes because we are living under God's control and God's rule. And so they get it, but they submit. And meekness means people who submit to a higher power, to another one, submitting to God. What will happen? Eventually, they'll inherit the earth. Jesus saying it's meek people, not forceful people, not proud people, not arrogant people who want to create demonstrations and overthrow government who will inherit the earth, but it's meek people who will inherit the earth. And eventually, 300 years after Jesus was here, the powerful Roman Empire came crumbling down and ended. And what happened? People became Christians. Hundreds, thousands, maybe tens of thousands, no one knows the numbers, of people all across the empire turned to the Jesus way, to Jesus' message, and they stopped fighting, and they stopped picking up weapons, and they stopped being proud, and they changed their lives morally. And the Roman Empire crumbled as Christianity emerged from the ashes and took over, and people started living like Jesus. And I believe that when we get this, we will change, but we will start to see a culture change. When we come in the attitude of listening, submissive, meek, and humble, then we will start to make a difference. But he goes on. The next group of three all talk about how we can make a difference. The first group are the starting point of how we want to make a difference, but the third group are practical ways and things we can start to do to make a difference in our lives and in our community. First one, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Now again, there's one of those religious words, isn't it? But unfortunately, it's not a religious word. A righteousness or righteous or what is right simply means to do what's right. That's all it means. It means to hunger and thirst for things to be right in your life, in your community, in other people's lives. That when people come to a youth club or a children's club or a food bank or a toddler's group, and we come alongside them, someone who's in this category says, how can we make your life better? How can we help things to be better in your life? Things are wrong. Things are not what you want them to be. We want them to be right. How can we do that? In fact, we are hungry, we are thirsty to help you to live life right. Not the way we want, but the way God wants you to. That's simply what this means. It means to be passionate about that, to look at your community and say, God, I am starving for some right living. I am so thirsty that people will get a taste of this and find out what it means to experience it. Promise, they'll be filled. They will be filled. People who want things, who hunger for this, God will fill their hearts and their lives with what is right. God longs to pour his rightness, if you want to look at it that way, into other people's lives. Longs to do that and to help them. Next, blessed are the merciful. Unexpectedly forgiving. It is so, so easy to judge. It is so, so easy to criticize. It is so easy to be negative, isn't it? It's the default position of the human heart. That's why we do it. But that is not God's default. God's default is forgiveness. God's default is not judgment and condemnation and criticism. God's default is showing mercy. The Bible says he loves to show mercy to people who don't deserve it. So why don't we? Why do we want people to sort their lives out and then we'll show them a little bit of mercy? Why can't we just show mercy? Even to people who don't deserve it, and give it away more freely, and give it away more generously, and give it away unexpectedly when people aren't expecting to get it from us. Showing mercy says they will be shown mercy. Start showing mercy in our lives this year. And then thirdly, in this category, are the pure in heart. This simply means people who are different. People who don't want their lives to be contaminated with this world. People who want their hearts to be genuine and sincere and right. People who want to live their lives out of a love for others and a love for God. And when God's love fills your heart will become pure. When God's love fills your heart will become pure. And out of that pure heart, we will start to show the love of God and people will see God. This is how we start to make a difference. Time's going, but I want to finish with the last three because I don't want to leave you in suspense. So very quickly, what will happen when we start doing all this? What will happen when we change and we hunger and we show mercy and we want to show love? What will happen? Here's what will happen. Peace. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the sons of God. We will start to promote peace. That peace will start in here, in our hearts. That peace will extend to our relationships, in our family, in our other extended family, with our friends, with our neighbors, with our work colleagues, with people in our community, with people that we come in contact with, and beyond. People who are peacemakers are the true sons or children of God. And you are never more in touch with the heart of God as when you bring peace into situations where there's conflict, where there's anger, where there's breakup, where there's animosity, where there's division. And when you and I bring peace into that as a child of God, there's nothing that brings more pleasure to God and more joy into people's lives than when we do that. We can keep extending it. We could talk a lot about bringing peace into the world, but it starts here at home. We're almost done. What will happen to us when we do this? Well, unfortunately, many people won't like it. And Jesus made it very clear to his followers, when you start living this out, when you start living this new lifestyle that I'm trying to work into you out, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness. You see, we have to understand this. We have a world that's at war with God's ways. We have a world that's not waiting to embrace Jesus. They're not, or you. And when you go into a situation as a peacemaker to try to make a difference, unfortunately, I need to tell you this, there'll be people who won't like it. They're not ready for it. They don't want it. And so what we can do is say, oh, let's just give up. Let's retreat into our little Christian bubble, our little church world, and not do it. It's too hard. No. God is saying to us, keep on doing it. I'm warning you, it will be tough. Okay, you'll be persecuted, but yours is the kingdom of heaven. Yours is the kingdom of heaven. God is with you in all of this. And the final one is this. Blessed are you when people insult you, because great is your reward. Even if people ignore you, even if they insult you, even if they really don't get it, don't stop. Don't give up, because you will make a difference. Because it's not about you, it's about God working through you in your life, in your relationships, in your society, in your community. So as the worship team come up to close this morning, I just want us to pause, just like us to pause at the end of our service. And I'd like us all just to examine our hearts today, examine our lives in the light of what Jesus would teach us. This is tough, this is hard. But as we've been listening to Jesus this morning, and really that's what I've been trying to introduce you to, the words of Jesus to his first disciples, the words of Jesus to us, saying, do you want to be blessed? Do you want to be happy? Do you want to spread that in your community and in your family and in your relationships and in your job? Do you? Do you want other people to feel that blessedness? Like that family this week who felt blessed when they got some good news? Well, present yourself to me. Come to me, Jesus said this morning. Recognize you don't have what it takes. Be truly sorry for that. And then hunger and thirst for the things that are right. Start showing mercy. Start spreading love. Introduce peace into situations. Even when people attack you for it, don't stop and watch what I will do, God is saying to you today. And may God bless you and be with you and help you as all of us seek to go out into our community this week as true Jesus followers who want to make a difference for him. Amen.